broadcasting on the internet and at 90.1 FM from high atop Burnaby Mountain. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Research has found that all forms of art have the potential to profoundly impact our neural circuitry, physiology, and influence our behavior. In this dialogue, we'll explore the evidence for using art-based interventions in healthcare, education, mental health treatment, and community building. So please join us as we explore how participating in the enjoyment of art, it's not just fun, which it is, but can impact our lives in more ways than we might realize, with our guests Susan Maxelman and Ivy Ross. Susie Maxelman is the founder and executive director of the International Arts Plus Mind Lab Center for Applied Neuroaesthetics. It's also known as the I Am Lab at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, where she's a faculty member in the Department of Neurology. Ivy Ross is Chief Design Officer of Consumer Devices at Google and has led teams in hundreds of design awards. She's a National Endowment for the Arts grant recipient and was ninth on Fast Company's list of the 100 most creative people in business in 2019. Susan Maxelman and Ivy Ross are co-authors of Your Brain on Art, How Art Transforms Us. So join us for the next hour as we explore how 20 minutes of doodling or humming can provide immediate support for your physical and mental well-being, and how art in its countless forms heals our bodies and minds, with our guests Susan Maxelman and Ivy Ross. I'm speaking with Susan and Ivy in their homes by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Susan, Ivy, welcome. Well, first of all, I just want to start off. Let's just talk about what is art. What do you consider art? I mean, is it hanging on the wall or is it making pottery? What is art? I just want to say, this is Ivy.
We like to think of it as all those things that allow us to creatively express. So it is, you know, painting, dancing, singing, even gardening, we realize, is the slowest art form. And, you know, and cooking and architecture, but it's those things that require us to express ourselves in some way. Susan?
As Ivy was talking, I think, you know, right now it's fall here in Baltimore, and I've been out picking up leaves and organizing them into little, like, shapes. That's art. Or, you know, I think we think of art as being so perfect. And in fact, it's really this idea of how do you express yourself in these ways that are not linear, that aren't logical, that really allow you to really find and share your voice.
Ivy?
As we did our research, you know, indigenous tribes never even don't have a word for art because it's the way they live their life. It is culture, singing, dancing, storytelling, drawing. I mean, that is, you don't have to have a separate word for it. And so I think we are designed, wired to be in the arts, receive the arts, indulge ourselves with the arts.
I want you to say more about that. We're wired for art. I mean, that's pretty profound. What does that mean? Our circuitry is there, our DNA is helping us?
So when we were working on the book, this is Susan. When we were working on the book, we had an opportunity to talk to E.O. Wilson, who is the Harvard evolutionary biologist. He passed shortly after we met with him. And it's a great story. I tried to get him on the phone several times. And every time I get him on the phone, he'd say, I've got to go for a walk. He had to go outside. And it was just so great. And then eventually he was like, all right, you got me. You got me. But what was really poignant for him is that he said that without these creative expressions, humanity could not evolve the way humanity has evolved. You know, as our brains got bigger, we were eating meat, this ability to bond with each other through these emotional, relational circuitry was something that really has been a differentiator for humans and other species. And when you think about it, it makes sense. You know, we bring the world in through our senses. It's the only way. And that doesn't mean that you might be have some impairment in some way. You have sight, you have sound, you have smell, you have touch, you have this taste, you have these abilities to process the world and bring it in. And when you bring it in, you create these strong neural pathways. And these pathways are what connect all of the different functions and structures, whether that's limbic structures like the amygdala, the hippocampus, or these more older systems that have developed that really help us process the somatosensory, the way senses come in, or the newer things like our prefrontal cortex that helps us to organize thought and to really be able to think and create cognitive, you know, knowledge. Those things are all neurophysiological. And so when Ivy says we are wired for the arts are the only way you can bring the arts into your body is through your senses. It turns out that these experiences, these creative experiences, are what's called salient. And so saliency is what is important to you, either practically or sort of emotionally. And so it makes sense that the arts are incredibly salient. So they create these very, very strong neural pathways.
Please define salient.
Salience is the experiences that you bring into your body that are either practical or emotionally important to you. And if you think about that, your brain makes this amazing executive decision that says, all right, I can't bring in all the things that are happening around me because it's quadrillions of things that are happening simultaneously. But what I am going to bring into the world are the things that matter most to me. And that is extraordinary that we have this ability to do that. And of course, a lot of those things are around survival, right? I mean, we want to make, but those things that we need to survive on, we learn best, we hold on best when they have that kind of aesthetic or art sort of experience that allows us to bring them in and hold them. So I'll give you one example, music.
Please.
We might use music when we're little. We learn Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. We learn You Are My Sunshine. We learn sometimes patriotic songs, right? Songs that bind us together. When you sing with someone who is older and maybe even has Alzheimer's, and you sing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, they will still be able to recall that song because it was so salient. They laid down strong neural pathways that went to the hippocampus, that is sort of the short-term memory aggregator. But then because it was so meaningful, the brain stores that information in other parts of the brain. So a song that is meaningful to you, that's salient to you, gets stored in many different parts of the brain. So even though you're losing your hippocampus because you may have dementia or Alzheimer's, you can still pull that out and sing that song, which is extraordinary.
I want to ask you, like, I know that there has been research on this where people hook up to the brain, the person's brain, and they start to map what lights up. So if Ivy, do you know anything about this kind of research and how it's used?
Well, I'll have Susan go in more depth, but certainly now, in fact, this research, the fact that we can learn what's going on in the brain without having to invade the brain, that is what's triggered our understanding. And we're finding out even different parts of the brain light up when you're doing improv versus when you're practicing music. So it's been an incredible unlocking of information. Susan, you want to add?
Yeah, you know, it's only been in the last 30 years that we've been able to non-invasively get inside our heads. So the first tool that was really most poignant was the fMRI, and then the EEG, and then the PET scan. And now there are actually mobile devices that allow us to look at these brain functions and structures in real time. So moving through the world, coming into an artist's studio, looking at things like variable heart rate or respiration or pulse, other kinds of things that you can do from a biometrics, you know, point of view. Eye tracking is another really important thing. So we're learning a lot. And what I think is interesting about this study, so the study of how the body and brain change on arts and aesthetic experiences and is translated into practices in our health, well-being, and learning, and community health, is called neuroaesthetics. The field is called neuroarts. And so we're building this field that incorporates many, many people that are involved, from artists to researchers to policymakers, funders, people that are interested in using this work in many different areas of their lives. But the research is really interdisciplinary, and that's important because you couldn't possibly take something so generative and reduce it to a single cell or a single biological structure, right? We know that the arts simultaneously impact both neurological and physiological systems, like, so at the same time. So your respiratory system, your cardiovascular system, your muscular system, your cognitive load, your emotions are all activated at the same time.
I just want to emphasize that because in science, in the, let's say in the past or even now, it's reductive. So it wants to kind of narrow things down. And so the field that we are talking about today, and you mentioned this, Susan, is interdisciplinary. It is huge. It's like, I mean, it's mind-boggling to think of the research being done today and all that it takes in just one particular process. If we're going to look at just one process, let's say, Ivy, I think you mentioned improv. If we just look at someone doing some improv, let's say improv dancing, and they're just moving their body, and to know all the different functions that are going on at the same time. Am I kind of getting the gist of this?
Yeah, and you know, we interviewed over 100 people. The complexity of social science, neuroscience, there's so many aspects to be able to then connect to make the statements that we do in the book.
I want to talk about that in just a moment, but I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Ivy Ross and Susan Maximin, and they are co-authors of Your Brain on Art, How the Arts Transform Us. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Susan Max-Salmon and Ivy Ross. They are the co-authors of Your Brain on Art. And if you want to know more about their work, you can go to an extensive website, yourbrainonart.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. And we're talking about art and how it can enhance our lives and the research that's been done on this. And a lot of people are talking about their health. Let's talk about art in the health sciences, and how is it being incorporated? What can you say about art and in all its form, dance, music, even the visual arts, even virtual reality or augmented reality, you know, all of these art forms, how can it benefit our health? Give some examples of some ways that it can do that.
Maybe I'll start and Ivy can jump in. You know, as we learn more about these mechanisms that are activated with different kinds of art forms, we know that there's a couple things that are universal. And one is that these arts in general tend to impact reward systems. So serotonin and dopamine and epinephrine and other kinds of endocrine system neurotransmitters get activated. And that's actually turns out to be pretty important, because we will do things when we have a reward, when they feel good, right? And so I think that's really interesting. They're also highly emotive, so they tend to activate the amygdala and the sort of primary central nervous system that's really critical for us to feel things, right? We often are so transactional that we don't feel things. We don't transform. We just move through in this sort of very robotic way. And so this idea of feeling and movement and feeling good turns out to be really important.
We move in a robotic way, but you're saying it's more than art does something more than having us just move in some sort of habitual way. Is that what you're
saying?
Right.
It activates these reward systems that help us to feel. So we know now that we probably have over 34,000 feelings. But if you were to ask somebody, well, how many feelings do you have? It might be like, well, there's anger, there's happy, there's, you know, we've become so transactional. And one of the things that the arts do is allow us to use those sensory systems and to really feel. But depending on the art form, you do have a different kind of feeling and a kind of interaction. So in using the arts for health, we know that Alzheimer's, which I mentioned earlier, is really influenced by movement and also by singing. We know with Parkinson's disease, dance is hugely important, and that's because it activates the cerebellum, the motor system. It also helps to activate other reward neurotransmitters besides dopamine. So serotonin in this case is very activated. So you lose dopamine when you have Parkinson's, but when you replace that in this moment with serotonin, gait improves, sleep improves, mood improves. And the more you do it, the more you delay or you manage the symptom relief of Parkinson's. We're starting to see designs in healthcare work around lowering anxiety and stress. And, you know, Ivy can even talk about in hospital rooms what happens when you bring art and nature into a healthcare setting.
Yeah, I mean, nature is the most neuroaesthetic place there is, because it alivens all of our sensory systems. It has temperature, sound, color, shape. It is our nature to be in nature. In fact,
and we can feel it on our skin, wind or the breeze.
As soon as we walk into it. I mean, and E.O. Wilson, when we talked to him, reminded us that 99.8% of the time we humans have been on Earth, we have lived in nature. It's only 0.2% of our time here that we've lived in the built environment. So it's no wonder that when we go out in nature, we feel alivened. We feel great. I mean, a lot of people during COVID, nature was, you know, a saving grace to be able to feel alive again. And even in hospitals, they've proven when those hospitals that have a garden, when they allow the patients to go downstairs, you know, the blood pressure immediately lowers. So there's a lot going on with hospitals, recharge rooms, where even not just the patients, but the folks that work in the hospitals, they're testing now where you can go to a, what they're calling a recharge room, where some of these theories of art, music, once they indulge in that, they're renewed to be able to go back and serve the patients. But, you know, what's amazing to me also is the fact that you don't have to be good at doing any of these arts. You don't have to be a good singer. You don't have to be a good drawer, painter. And I think so many of us as kids, we were into the arts and then we were shut down at some point because a teacher or our parents said, you know, that's not the way you draw that.
Right. Draw in the lines, yep. Stay in the lines.
And that was traumatic. And we shut down, not realizing how imperative it was for learning and for health and wellness. And so we get so many people that say to us, thank you for giving me permission to make art again. Or we decided, you know, we're never going to make a living at this. So why should we do it? When now science is finding out we are designed to be having these expressive, emotive experiences, and we must do them, whether we are the doer or the recipient of them. So even sitting in a theater, watching a theater performance is incredibly good for you and for your brain.
So that's like there's participatory art where we're actually creating it. But then there's when we just are observing it, like we're seeing a play. And I know, Susan, you had a wonderful experience that you have talked about when you went to see David Byrne's Broadway play, American Utopia. And I'd love for you to describe who he is and what your experience was when you attended that Broadway play.
Sure. That makes me think a lot about how we are actually absorbing these experiences. We're not just, you know, we're not just observers, we're absorbers. And David Byrne was the lead singer in a group called Talking Heads, and they were very popular in the 70s and continued. But David is a real creative. And so over the years, he's continued to create really thoughtful, interesting things. He's also very interested in this mind-body connection and what's happening in our bodies and how he can use the arts to create social connection and to help us really be more in community. So American Utopia was a really extraordinary immersive experience where you came into the theater and what you heard were birds chirping and nature sounds. And, you know, not again to this idea of transaction versus transcendence. I'm not sure that everybody heard it, but you felt it because sound affects you in 3 milliseconds. And so when you move in, Ivy was talking about you move into nature, you are almost instantly resonating with a space that you're in. And that's important because we have to choose what spaces we want to be in and how we want our bodies to resonate. So you're in this theater that feels like you're in nature. The stage, there was no props on the stage and no stage setting other than all of the performers came out in these kind of gray outfits. So what amplified was the way they moved and the instruments that they played and the way they moved around the stage, but there was no other visual cues other than people. So you were cued into the people and their voices and the resonance of this. And he came out and he started holding a brain in his hand and said, this is like the most extraordinary thing in the universe. And then proceeded to move us all through. And these songs that were old songs and some new songs. And then finally, at the end, you know, people are like the anticipation of you're in your seat, right? All of a sudden he said, now you can dance. And everybody went crazy and everybody started to dance. And when you synchronize in singing and dancing, you create these extraordinary neural connections between each other. So, you know, you're your parasympathetic nervous system is engaged, your cerebellum is engaged as you're moving, but you're also, when you're in sync and you're in a state of awe, you actually emotionally connect to each other. And one of the outcomes is we're all more open, we're all more willing to help each other. And that makes sense. You know, if you think about how we march or how we sing in churches together, that is a human evolutionary requirement for how we become a community. And he illustrated that in such a fun, beautiful way. So, so he also did something called the Social Distance Dance Club at the end of COVID, where people had been in lockdown, a lot of sadness, a lot of loneliness, a lot of sense of isolation. So he created these 6-foot circles where people could dance within their circles, but they couldn't dance directly with each other. And what he found was that people found each other to move together with, and they synchronized with each other and began to start to create this social connection and this bonding that we all need so desperately as human beings. And so that was a really fun example of how to sort of come out of COVID and begin to start to figure out how you create this new social fabric that we've so lost through COVID and through other kinds of, you know, conflict.
So Susan, when you left the theater after this experience, can you describe how you felt?
Awe-inspired, you know, bigger, like there was that I was part of something bigger, and that there was a sense of purpose and meaning and just pure joy, you know. And that's an underrated emotion. You know, feeling joy, pure joy, feeling part of a community is, I think, kind of the pinnacle of what it means to be alive. Being, human being. I love that name.
Let's talk about there's an epidemic of loneliness and isolation. And I'm thinking about how there are young people who get isolated, and they people we're talking about mental health for these young people that take a gun and walk into a school. And what can the arts do to help the mental stability of these kids? Do you have any thoughts on that, either of you?
Well, it's a complicated question, right? The first answer is gun laws that don't make it easy for anybody to be able to use their rage in that way. And that's probably a whole other conversation.
Yes, exactly.
But, you know, we do know that when you aren't bottling up your emotions, when you're getting them out in pro-social ways, in thinking about the arts.
I'm going to interrupt you because this is a big subject, and I want to have you be able to go, both of you, go into this thoroughly with your own experience and your own research work and all the things that you are working with in your life and in your different areas that your teams of people. So I want to remind us that we're here with Susan Max Salmon and Ivy Ross, and they are the co-authors of Your Brain on Art. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Susan Max Salmon and Ivy Ross.